My next interview, which is with well-known biographer Anne Seber, whose latest biography is about Ethel Rosenberg, a Cold War tragedy. And in 1953, Ethel Rosenberg and her husband were executed in the United States on the grounds that they sold America's nuclear secrets to the Soviets. Anne Seber, the author, joins us now from Crete. Is that where you live, you lucky thing?
Oh, well, it sounds very lucky. I'm here on holiday, so it's a pleasure to talk to you. It's very, very hot here.
Okay. Well, you're lucky that you're able to go on holiday. If we want to go on holiday, we're allowed to leave our suburb but not go much further than that. But we're not getting into... we're not getting into that now. I mean, I read that your fascination with Ethel Rosenberg started when you read John Updike's fictional version of what happened to her and Julius.
Yes, Doctorow's book, actually, the
Doctorow,
book
sorry,
of
yeah.
Daniel.
Yeah.
I lived in New York years ago, I mean, 43 years ago, and I read it then when I was a young mother with two babies. And there must have been a seed planted, but obviously I had a lot of growing up to do between then and now. And since then, I've written books about wives and mothers and sisters. And so that's what I really enjoy doing. And I felt with the story of the Rosenbergs that everyone kept referring to them as just that, the Rosenbergs, those spies. And I felt that actually Ethel ought to be extrapolated from her husband. What we now know is that Julius was a spy. I'm not sure he was an atomic spy, but we can park that for the moment. But Ethel was not involved in spying. She was actually convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage. And I think everybody agrees that what she did really was she acted as a wife. She knew what her husband did. She supported him. She probably even approved. But she was convicted on dubious grounds. I mean, multiple miscarriages of justice.
Including a lie told by her favorite nephew who wanted her to be in the spotlight rather than his wife.
Yes, precisely. Perjury. Let's
call it
out.
What it is.
More
yeah.
than a lie. Perjury. It was her younger brother, younger by 7 years, who was a spy, and he did a plea bargain, and he wanted to get himself a lesser sentence, which he got. He served 9.5 years, and his wife was never indicted. And when he came out of prison, he admitted that he'd made up a great big fat lie about having seen Ethel do the typing, because that was the only evidence they could provide. But really, she was arrested in order to act as a lever on her husband. The government and the FBI knew that the evidence against her was weak or shaky at best, but they thought if they arrested and charged her, that she would name names, that no mother, because she had two young children. They were 10 and 6 when she was electrocuted. And the government was convinced that she would talk. And so they went with her younger brother's perjury. And that was the only overt act on which Ethel was actually electrocuted.
I mean, she was as committed a communist as her husband was, but that's not a capital crime.
You're absolutely right. And that's what I really try and talk about in my book. It's not a crime to think. It's actually not a crime to know. And she was not obliged to report spousal wrongdoing. The only crime is taking affirmative action. And that's why the government, even though it knew that they didn't have evidence, they went with her younger brother's perjury, because as the Deputy Attorney General said at the end, she called our bluff. They couldn't make up their minds about Ethel. sometimes they thought, oh, you know, she's a weak mother, she'll give in, she'll name names. And sometimes they positioned her, they gave her the label as the stronger partner. Not only the judge, who in his summing up revealed appalling misogyny because she was 3 years older, they said she must be the senior partner, but that sort of thinking permeated the government. So when Ethel wrote her final appeal to President Eisenhower, he was really on the hook, and he didn't like the idea of electrocuting a woman, but he had swallowed this line that because she was the older one, she must be the senior partner. It was a sort of garbled Nietzschean philosophy that someone had introduced along the way, saying that, you know, if a woman becomes a spy and if a woman is 3 years older than her husband, that's somehow abnormal. I can only tell you that the way Ethel was used, she came to symbolize an attack on American motherhood, a whole attack on the American way of life. So they had to vilify her, really. They had to turn her into some kind of transgressive witch and older woman. And you see this at various stages, including their indecision as to who they should electrocute first. They didn't know who'd give way. So they thought, well, Ethel's bound to be the stronger one. We'll make her wait, and she'll be the second one to be electrocuted. We'll kill the husband first. So, you know, what I've really tried to do in this book is not paint Ethel as a saint. She was flawed, and she was, as you say, a communist, although not everybody would say that that's something that you arrest people for, let alone kill them for. But I just wanted to turn her into a three-dimensional woman.
A human being. Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't know an enormous amount about her, but I had, I suppose, the conventional view of her, which that she was almost an automaton, that she was drab, that she was gauche, that she was not much of a character. But, I mean, finding out about her desire to be an opera singer and her ability to sing and to find out more about the strong woman who was not just an adjunct to her husband and somebody who loved her sons. And I was weeping when I was reading the pages about that last visit of those two little boys to her, and those extraordinary letters that she wrote to them afterwards.
Yes.
She's a fully fledged human being.
Well, thank you. I'm very grateful to hear that the book had that effect. If the book is about one thing, it's actually about the importance of the rule of law, because what you actually see is a government that is willingly using one of its citizens for the greater good. I mean, there is a sort of view that says, we know they were a bit guilty. We know that Julius was selling secrets and his wife approved, so therefore, you know, she deserved to die as well. Well, no, actually, according to the rule of law, she did not deserve to die just because she supported her husband. She could have had a prison sentence, and she could have been a mother to her boys. And that's the other thing my book is about. It's about families and how her younger brother sold her down the river, but how she was absolutely determined to leave her sons a legacy of loyalty, and loyalty to her husband arguably cost her her life. But she believed that that was something they could live with, and indeed they have, other than betrayal, which is what her family did to her. I mean, I think Ethel was betrayed by her family, by the media, by politicians, and by the judiciary. And in a way, that's the most shocking thing, because, as I said, I lived in America. I love America. My daughter was born there and is an American. And so to find that American justice did not live up to everything we expect of it, albeit for a brief moment in time, I found really pretty shocking.
Roy Cohn was part of the state's team, and he became, in the early days of Donald Trump, he became his go-to man. And so there's a kind of not surprising link in there. And Seba, thank you very, very much for talking to us about your extremely readable biography of Ethel Rosenberg, A Cold War Tragedy.